Robinhood Radio presents Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willems. Michelle is a longtime journalist and herself is a published playwright of several theatrical works. She's a frequent contributor to the Huffington Post, Daily Beast, and the Atlantic websites. Another opening of
another show. Well, I saw three productions this past week, all off the beaten path. One deals with cultural diplomacy from the Asian point of view. One is equally political, but from the far right side of the aisle, or more accurately, the country. And finally, there is yet another take on one of Tennessee Williams' classics. Well, let's start with the first written, that being The Glass Menagerie. Now, I've seen this play with Cherry Jones, Judith Ivey, and most recently Sally Field in the leading role of Amanda. I missed the one with Jessica Lange. Clearly, every actress of note needs to get this liltingly dominating mother on her resume. The current production, directed by Austin Pendleton and Peter Block, is playing at the tiny and much appreciated Wild Project in the lowest end of the East Village. The set is minimal. There are a few props. A typewriter sits ominously on a small table, a future playwright in the family we know. But then other scenes, like sitting at the dinner table, are completely mimed. The show is nicely performed, the women in particular, Ginger Grace as Amanda and Alexandra Rose as her painfully shy, physically disabled daughter, whose only companions are tiny glass animals. They're both excellent. As always, the play is slow-going, more than two intermission-free hours. Now, even though it's often been staged in unusual ways, a body of water decorated one theater, I recall. Ultimately, there is only so much one can do with The Glass Menagerie. Apparently, the idea here was to do it in the style of horror films. Well, it is creepy, with very little lighting and dark elements, but Tennessee Williams' words shed their own kind of light. The past turns into everlasting regret if you don't plan for it. He was a telephone man who fell in love with long distance. Being disappointed is one thing, being discouraged is another. The Glass Menagerie always was and always will be a memory piece that some love and some cannot tolerate. I'm somewhere in the middle, I'd say, but sentiments like that don't get old, even while audiences do. Now, the other two shows I saw were memorable in their own ways. Soft Power at the Public Theater is one of the more unique works on stage right now. It's sort of a musical, sort of an autobiographical piece. It includes a singing and dancing Hillary Clinton on top of a Big Mac, no less, and a clever take on The King and I. How come a white person always gets to be the I, one character asks. And the show could hardly be more topical on the issue of U.S.-Chinese relations. We don't need America to buy our products anymore. It's a rather rollicking, even campy, and occasionally lovely couple hours. The creative team here is stellar. Book and lyrics by David Henry Huang. That's also the name of the main character whose bloody predicament sets the story off. Music's by Janine Tesori of Fun Home fame and direction by Lee Silverman. There's a lot of stuff happening. Some find it a tad messy. Its subjects include identity and appropriation, guns, and most importantly, freedom and democracy. Did I mention its admirable attempt to make sense of the 2016 election? How did this happen, asked one character. How does the Electoral College work? It doesn't, comes the reply. Well, we are either in a show within a show or a dream within an injured man's head. At one point, we even jump 50 years into the future. So let's just say your mind and eyes stay busy if you head to the Public for some Soft Power. Last week, you might recall, I talked about the political plays filling stages right now. Well, Soft Power certainly qualifies, and so too does the much-talked-about one at Playwrights Horizons on Theater Row. Called Heroes of the Fourth Turning, it is a provocative, harsh, very, very talky, and occasionally humorous piece written by 30-year-old Will Arbery. Now, he was raised by conservative Catholics in the Midwest, and this play is about, well, five Catholic conservatives who are together for a mini reunion in Wyoming. Four are millennials. The mother of one shows up later. She has just been named the president of the college they all attended. Well, what can I say? This is two nonstop hours of largely fascinating and surprisingly complex political debate. The liberals are empathy addicts, a character claims, spewing vicious rhetoric at all things liberal, personified by Barack Obama. Thank God we elected someone more human, they say of the new guy, who another calls a golem molded from the clay of mass media to come save us all. There are disagreements within these generally like-minded folks. You'll get an earful of both sides of the abortion issue, sort of. Occasionally one defends a past vote. You will hear a loud gunshot and then some mysterious explosive sounds. You'll watch a character vomit rather unpleasantly. You will enjoy five top-notch performances. The direction is somewhat odd in that there's so much darkness on the set. The audience occasionally feels outside the action, which all takes place outside a home on this noisy night. Is Heroes of the Fourth Turning entertaining? Well, I can't necessarily say yes, but it is theater, and for many of us, it is a chance to hear from those who could care less about an LGBTQ world. Tired of protests and pronouns, they claim. And maybe that's an important reminder and warning. So, another interesting week, once again proving Off-Broadway has a lot to say. Though next week I'll be discussing a pair of new on-Broadway shows, creating their own kind of chatter. One stars the incredibly talented Mary Louise Parker, a show that started in your area, by the way. The other is notable for its playwright, the man behind August Osage County. So, Jill, never boring. So stay tuned.
That is true. It's never boring. So speaking of never boring, I was leafing through my ancient newspapers. You know, everyone knows or should know that I just lug piles and piles of papers around. And this was from October 3rd, New York Post. It says, Broadway houses full. No room at the inn. No theaters available. For Almost Famous, blah, 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 there's no available house. The wrong man, currently playing at the MCC, hasn't found a Broadway home. They're all full. Is that, how accurate
have
is that?
To look at the, is that possible? Maybe it is. The wrong man, that's probably, I guess we're talking about moving into a larger house. Than
right.
MCC, which, that's not going to happen anyway, even if they could. But I don't know. I guess maybe nothing is closed. You know, I keep saying, I think, well, Inheritance, we know plays are in previews. Inheritance is in previews. A lot of them, you know,
Which means they've already got theaters. Obviously.
They've already got the theaters. They just haven't officially opened yet. So there is a lot of that. And I'm still waiting. You know, Circle in the Square is going to be, I assume Oklahoma will be gone by the end of the year. I still think Beetlejuice may be in trouble. I think Tootsie may be in trouble. Yeah, that's very possible. I mean, you hear all the time. I've talked to producers or investors who say they've been waiting for a theater or the right theater for more than a year. It seems hard to imagine, but and a lot of these book up long in advance, of course, and then they have shorter runs than they expect. And then you'll hear the good lucks, the happy story of somebody saying, oh my God, they called and said a theater just opened up. We have to get ready to go, you know. So, well, I guess that's good news in a way. You could say it's good news if people are going to the theaters. And I must say, when I go to almost all of them, I look around behind me and they're mostly filled. You know, who knows what people are paying? They're probably paying half price for a lot of the seats, but still, it's good news. Even, you know, at the Public Theater, I looked around yesterday, Playwrights Horizons, I looked around, and of course, those smaller theaters depend on subscribers, and that's different. Same with Lincoln Center.
And they also want this, they want this fare, you know, they want to be stimulated in this way.
That's right. They know what they're going for. They know that they're not what they're not going for. But those are very specific audiences, very specific theaters, New York Theater Workshop, Playwrights Horizons. You know you're going there and you're getting. You don't see many audience members walk out saying, "Jesus, you know, I didn't expect that." They kind of know what they're getting when they subscribe. Lincoln Center, you know, which is doing the Great Society right now. I don't know if the Great Society would be up on another house. But it was long committed to great. But that's the right kind of audience. So it's a lot of it's about knowing your audience. The big theaters, that's interesting. That I had not read that they're all.
How long does it take if you've got a biggish show that you want to move in?
To actually physically get in?
Yeah. I mean, obviously not just, but broadly.
It could happen. Well, everybody does previews, so you use that period as moving in. You'll do your rehearsal, because you've been rehearsing somewhere else, obviously, for a long time. So you move it in, you know, a couple weeks on your own.
All right, so essentially you can do, it's a reasonably quick-ish turnaround.
Yeah, your play's ready. You just need to get in the new environment, set up the stage. You know, you do have to design a stage. It's probably been, all that stuff's been done, you know, in rehearsal studios, preparing for the right size venue. So they can get up pretty quickly. But you know, you gotta remember a lot of these shows have very long previews periods, which again most tourists don't care about. They come to New York, they've got 1 week in New York, they don't care about if it's in previews. They don't even know often what that means. I talk about this quite often, but for the playwright and the actors, those are very important periods. And they really are tweaking those shows right up into the end. You know, you go to previews and you look, if you're smart enough, you look behind, you'll see a director or a producer standing back there with a notepad. You know, they're listening. When are the laughs? When are people are looking at their watches?
Yeah, and so, it's just an interesting reminder to a completely unscreened mentality that live is completely different, and you have to pay attention to how people are reacting and then adjust accordingly. It's almost a foreign concept when you get too much screen going on.
No, that's right. I talked to somebody who was here recently visiting, and they had seen The Great Society, and they said, it was surprising Brian Cox didn't seem to know all his lines. And I said, you know, you saw a very early preview. They said, well, they didn't know that. You know, they're here for a week. They want to see Brian Cox. So, you know, you got to remember that if you are going
It absolutely used to be. I don't know that it's for. It used to be a known thing. If you're in previews, you're in previews. That means show's not frozen. You're going to learn. You're going to see something, and that's, you know, and you should probably, if you like it and can, go back and see it afterwards.
Absolutely, it's fascinating to do that. And until they really, it's not until about the weekend before they open when they do the tech, the final tech, that they're locked in, as they say, frozen. You know. Where they're not allowed to change anymore. But it is interesting, and I have gone back to see shows later on just to see if they've been cut. But, you know, most people don't have that luxury, let's put it that way. But anyway, it is an interesting time, and I'm happy to hear that the theater is getting filled. Couldn't make me happier.
Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willens, produced in the studios of Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com.